Welcome back to another episode of Palisade Radio. I'm your host, Karem Mamutlu. And on today's show, we welcome back David Skarica, who is the editor and publisher of AddictedToProfits.net. In our last interview at the beginning of the year, we talked about if and when gold would break out, and you gave some great analysis about quantitative tightening, interest rates, and the recent actions from the Fed. It appears as though much has changed since the beginning of the year in regards to investors' expectations of gold and the correlation between a weaker dollar or recession fears and perhaps a weakening US stock market. So is now the time for gold to act the way it should be in terms of price discovery, in your view, David?
Well, I think there's some unique things happening in the gold market that have never happened before, and I'll get into that in a second. But in terms of on the U.S. front with the Federal Reserve and QT and interest rates, one of the things I think I said in that interview too was that when they reverse course is when you would see a move up in gold, and that's exactly what's happened. Now, it hasn't been like this huge reverse course, like in the middle of 2007 or even 1998, when they came in and did surprise rate cuts and all this sort of thing. It's been more, you know, this gradual signaling that I think they announced that QT is going to end in September. So what I'm trying to say is, I think that reverse course is why you've seen this move. And also, here's the unique part of it, is we're talking about the dollar and, you know, all these sorts of things. I don't even think that matters right now, because we've seen gold rallying the last few months when the dollar's up, when it's dollar, and rallies when the dollar's down. I think a lot of the money flowing into the gold and precious metals market is actually coming from the European bond market. And what I mean by that, you have all these institutions in Europe, and they have to allocate money. And you know, a lot of their kind of, you know, low risk money goes into these long-term bonds, right? And so when they go into these long-term bonds, you know, they just want the money back. Well, they still also want a little bit of return on that capital. Well, so right now, all these European bonds are negative yields. Even on the short end, in the Italian bond is negative. So German bonds, Swiss bonds, you know, Austrian bonds, French bonds, whatever they may be going out, a lot of them 5-10 years are yielding negative. And I think that money that would have gone into these bonds is actually going into gold and precious metals. Because what's always people's argument against gold? Oh, it doesn't yield anything. Oh, it costs money to, you know, to own. You know, you got a storage fee or whatever. Well, that's exactly what a bond is. When you're paying a negative yield, you have no yield, and you're basically paying for the right to own it, because you got to pay that interest out, right, and that negative yield. So I think that is a huge factor, that you're probably seeing a lot of institutional money come into the precious metals market from Europe due to all these negative yields, right? So that's a unique factor that has nothing to do with the Fed or what's going on in the US.
Certain gold stocks have begun to push higher on the back of this recent move in gold, but it appears far less dramatic than if we compare it to what occurred at the beginning of 2016. So are many investors still not completely convinced of this move in gold, or is this the kind of skepticism that's perhaps essential for gold stocks to surprise to the upside later in the year?
I think there's, again, numerous reasons for why that hasn't happened in terms of, you know, some kind of big move by investors into gold. I think part of the reason is just quite simply, we've had this bull market in the United States in the stocks. It's now 3 years older. And the longer that this bull market goes on for, the more complacent investors get. And of course, so that I think back in 2016, gold had that huge move, and especially that was right off the correction of 2015 and early 2016. They were more likely just to kind of pile into something else, because stocks, and if you go look at the bottom of that correction, early 2016, the market actually had been going nowhere for almost two and a half years at the bottom of that correction. So I think you had then, you had underperformance. The market hadn't gone up as long as it had now. And then I think on top of that, you've had that, you know, even though it busted last year, you had that crypto mania, but it has rallied. A lot of the coins have rallied back strongly in the last few months as well. So you have the combination of this long in the tooth stock market, bull market, and, you know, got other asset classes like crypto and marijuana stocks, which has done well the last few years. So there's less incentive for the small retail investor to go into gold and precious metals, which I think is a good thing, because I think this rally is being met with a lot of skepticism, especially because that 2016 rally did fail and then consolidate for a few years. And I think at some point, though, probably when you finally see a big rollover in the stock market and the Fed has to really get aggressive to cut rates, do QE, et cetera, I think that's when you're going to really see the move into gold. The stock, sorry.
In our previous interview, David, you told us the story about the value investor John Templeton investing in the 1930s, over 100 companies at under a dollar, which most of them were in bankruptcy. And he was simply waiting for a turnaround due to World War II and the new demands that would come in from supplying arms. And in essence, he was buying the unloved with the strategy of waiting for a new narrative for these stocks to unfold. So can you tell us more about your investment approach in regards to a value investor like John Templeton and how that relates to commodities and mining stocks?
Well, there's a great book called Investing the Templeton Way that kind of talks about it. And there's also a great study by Maybain Faber, who runs an ETF in the States. I think Cambria is the company that he works for. Anyhow, and the study shows what happens to an asset class when it goes down like 70% in price. So it's got the study of the three returns, three-year returns after something goes down 70, 80, or 90%. And it shows that almost in all cases, the three-year returns are over 100%. So triple digits. Now, you have to be patient enough to wait for that to occur. And George Soros has another term for it. It's called reflexivity, where something just overshoots in one direction. In this case, we're talking about the downside and then reflexes back up to the upside. So where I think that plays into mining stocks are really twofold. Number one, you actually want to own some of the quote unquote crap companies at the bottom of the cycle. Now, the difficulty and the timing of that is some of those companies, and I've seen it happen, can go under because, you know, they have high costs, they have debt levels, and they can't service it. They're losing a lot of money, and then they just go to zero. No, but if you're like, if you can see though that the market's starting to turn, as we saw in the last few months, when you go from being a weak company to say at least stable, there's a lot more leverage because the market's priced you almost for going under. Like if you look at stocks like Eldorado and New Gold, and these are the stocks that were down 90 or 95%, they all had the same problem: higher costs, the property that they own wasn't as profitable, they thought, big debt loads. But these companies, all of a sudden, when the market turns, the higher costs are covered by higher gold prices, they can service the debt, and they have more leverage to the upside. So I think that's where the Templeton pessimism comes in for the mining stocks, is you look actually for some of these companies that are really beaten up and have problems. And as long as you think they can survive, you can buy them. And the second one, I think, is the junior miners, the little penny stocks, you know, which I'm active in and do financings in. At this stage in the cycle, you have companies that have, millions of ounces of gold or tens of millions of ounces of silver, and maybe are a near production mine. Maybe they took over a mine that went down in the last cycle. And those kind of stocks are really leveraged because usually at the bottom of the cycle, they're only priced, I mean, they have nothing priced in them. They're priced like a little penny stock, but actually they have a significant profitable asset right in the ground. So those are usually where I find, and I'll give you an example of that, because, you know, we talked about Templeton's example. There was a company I invested in called Avion Resources, or we had in the newsletter back in 2009, and they had just taken over a property in Mali in Africa from Nevsun. And Nevsun had not properly drilled or mined this thing. So they re-drilled it. They put it back into production. It was right at the start of the gold market, bull market from 2009 to 2011. And when the cash flow came in and when, you know, it was obvious that they knew what they were doing and they turned this mine around, the stock went from 6 cents to $2, eventually got taken out near a dollar. The reason it fell back to a dollar is there was a coup in Mali. So the political risk kind of hit it more than anything to do with the property. And of course, that is one of the risks you take when investing in these companies. But anyhow, that's the classic example. You get the turnaround, you get an asset that's depressed, and then you get the price of the underlying metal increasing, and it's kind of becomes this best of all news scenarios.
Some great analysis there. Okay, let's talk about a few of the books that have shaped your career so far, David. Before the interview, you mentioned to me Mass Psychology by Jim Dines and also Extraordinarily Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. So why were these books important to you?
On top of that, there's one I was looking for just quickly. It was by John Kenneth Galbraith. And it's let's just talk about Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. So the one by Galbraith, I can't remember it, but it's about all the financial, it's called A Short History of Financial Euphoria. So if you just want to look at finances, that's the one to read. The Extraordinary Popular Delusions, that was written, and it's got the South Sea Bubble and the Mississippi scheme and the tulip mania, but it's also got stuff on witch hunts and other things. But anyhow, that one's important because it talks about mass psychology and kind of how that can influence people's thought. And there's Kyle Bass, a famous hedge fund manager, said he thinks the average investor's time frame is 2 years in terms of their historical way they look at markets. And what he means by that is he thinks that the average investor just looks at what happened the last 2 years and just thinks that's going to go on indefinitely. And that was kind of where I was just mentioning the market. Well, the market's, you know, been going up since 2017. And that's why, you know, investors think it's going to keep going up forever. In 2009, I had a conference in the Bahamas and everyone at the conference, except for me, was bearish on the market because the market had been going down for 2 years. So I think the Extraordinary Popular Delusion shows you why do these like booms and busts happen? Why do these big bubbles happen? And it shows the power of mass psychology. And maybe back in the 18th century, it was everyone would be in a room bidding up the price of something, you know, and read it in the newspaper every day. But now it's just people may not be screaming at each other, you know, on a trading floor, but they're just on their phones and they're all seeing the same thing move and they're all chasing it. You know, you saw that in crypto in late 2017. So I think that importance of showing the kind of manias and mass psychology, and I'll get to that book in a second, and the way that crowd psychology can drive markets. Like, why do these gold stocks get undervalued just recently? As we mentioned, it's because the mass crowd had no interest in them because they haven't done anything for a long time, and so therefore they beat them down or they just totally ignore them, and that's when you get your great bargains and deals. And mass psychology is interesting because it has, you know, a similar theme in terms of talking about crowd psychology, but it also points out people's individual psychologies and how that may affect your kind of trading, right? So, if someone is a cheapskate, they might actually gravitate to lower price stocks all the time, and not in a good way like Templeton did with that trade, but just always wanting to buy 10-cent stocks because they're cheap. But maybe a lot of the 10-cent stocks are just garbage and they're never going to do anything, right? Rather than, you know, buying a stock, you know, like you could have bought Google on its IPO at whatever, $100, and now the stock is $1,000, right? Anyway, it talks about your individual psychology and how that can relate and affect your trading. So that's good, because with that book, I find you do a lot of self-reflection, right? And it's just amazing too, when you deal with these personality types throughout your life, that book goes through that. So a lot of it's not even trading. It's more just like psychology of, human beings and the whatnot. And then also relates to that, to trading. So, that's by Jim Dines, who's actually still around. He writes the Dines Letter, and there's actually a lot of it, good information on technical analysis in there too, because Dines is like a technician, it's a chartist. So, those really influenced me. As you notice, it's almost all it has to do with psychology and, because the Investing the Templeton Way, which was another one I mentioned to you and mentioned earlier in the interview, that again talks about how Templeton, you know, bought these maximum pessimism trades, etc. So to me, psychology is probably the most important thing in a bull market. It can be difficult because we look at this bull market currently, it's gone on for so long and investors are overall pretty exuberant and have been for a little while. It's tough to know when you hit that extreme, but I also argue that you don't have to get out at the top, right? Like you can always find other cheap asset classes. I essentially haven't been in the major stock market for 3 or 4 years other than doing a few marijuana deals and a few trades here and there. But, you know, with this huge run in gold, my outperformance in the last year has been phenomenal. So you can always find cheap asset classes. And you could have bought Argentina a few years ago in 2013. You could have bought in Greece. Actually, you could have repurchased Greece a few months ago before the election. So there's always something that's cheap, even during a raging bull market. And you don't have to be sucked in by the psychology.
Excellent. Okay, as we begin to wrap up, David, is there anything else on your mind or anything else that investors should be taking a look at currently?
Well, I think too, on top of psychology, and then again, the question, as I mentioned, it becomes timing. How do you know it's about to move? Well, if we look at gold, for example, this is there's a great saying, technical terms, very simple. The longer the base, the more the space, meaning the longer you kind of build this huge base, or it's a, you know, you can also call it coiled spring, the bigger the move's going to be. Well, gold spent 6 years basing, right? And it is now breaking out to the upside. And I think after a 6 year base like that, it means that you're going to have a huge bull move, like 5 or 10 years, you know, similar to the 01 to 2011 bull move. So, and then if you look at negative interest rates, the debt levels of governments around the world, the fact that we're probably near the end of the stock market bubble, you know, within the next 6 to 12 to 18 months, I would still be very cognizant of the hypervaluations in the stock market and hedge. I'm still hedged, even though, you know, right now I'm more active in the gold and precious metals arena.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time again today, David. Much appreciated.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Think you understand the junior mining sector and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw materials. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on in Yemen?